Sleazecast.
Hello?
Toby Zitman?
Yes?
This is the Nightcaller, calling to talk to you about immigration.
I'm sorry, who are you?
The Nightcaller. You're Midnight. You were talking about immigration earlier, and I'm calling to tell you my opinion.
Look, I don't know who this is. Do you know what time it is? How did you get this number?
Immigration. That's what you were discussing earlier.
How do you know what I've been talking? I haven't said anything on immigration. Anyway, how did you know I'd be here? This isn't my house.
Yes, you did. You know, earlier this evening. In the pub. You were discussing how all these East Europeans were coming over here, using our health services, claiming our benefits, having sex with our women. Expecting something for nothing, a lot of them. You challenged someone to say it was different. Well, I'm phoning in to give you my opinion on the subject.
Why would I want to hear the opinion of some weirdo phoning me up in the middle of the night? Who are you?
The other customers in the pub didn't want to hear your opinions, but they were forced to anyway. The fact is that these East Europeans are all paying tax here while they work. They're entitled to health care to the value of their contributions. Also, their governments reimburse us for any benefits they claim.
This is some kind of wind-up, isn't it? Are you saying you're from some kind of radio phone? Look, I haven't called your bloody station.
That's right. We've called you. That's the point. We're Radio Midnight. You don't listen to us. We listen to you, and then call it into you.
What? What are you bloody talking about? How are you listening to us? Is this going on here?
Well, we're listening.
What's that supposed to mean? Look, this is ridiculous. We've had enough. I don't want to discuss my opinions on immigration with you or any other freak.
You were happy to discuss it in the pub.
That was different. I've told you I don't want to discuss this.
But you're still on the line.
You called me?
Exactly. But if you don't want to talk about immigration, how about women?
What about them?
Give them a slap, throw them on the bed and tell them to shut up. They have to know their place. Wasn't that what you said?
No, that's enough. This has gone too far. I'm hanging up.
Give them one up the jacksie. They'll love it. You said that as well, didn't you?
This is outrageous. I'll ask you again. Who are you? How did you know where the freedom is? I'm not at home.
We know you aren't at home. Do you think your wife would agree with your opinions about women?
What's she got to do with...
Doesn't she like anal? Is that why you aren't at home tonight? Where does she think you are?
Look, this is none of your bloody business, whoever you are.
We've got her on the line right now. Perhaps you'd like to speak to her.
Jesus Christ!
Bells of St. Mary's. Just a school song, you might say, and yet for some it was a hymn, a litany, a dedication. Oh, they tell me I made quite a splash at St. Mary's. The very first day I arrived, in fact. You see, Sister Benedict was head of the school, and she thought I needed a formal introduction.
Children, 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 this is our new pastor, Father O'Malley, and I'm sure he has something very important to say to you. Father?
Well, children, you're going to see a lot of me in the future. I'm
I'm going to be around here a great deal. So you're going to hear the shortest speech ever made. This is...
Father O'Malley.
Pretty effective, sir.
I am sure they loved it.
Well, when we were kids, we used to just live for... You know, we should never get too far away from our childhood.
But you can't just like that. You have to get permission of the superintendent of schools. Oh, Father, what will we tell the superintendent?
Of course, you were pretty good with the stick.
Hmm? I must admit, I played with the boys. Father O'Malley.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Dirty, your weekly podcast on where we talk frankly about sexual matters. Well, in this edition, we're going to take a look at the growing number of enthusiastic amateurs developing their own sex machines and bondage gear in their own homes. I mean, I'm sure, like me, you've seen the ads appearing in the specialist press and websites springing up on the internet offering penetration and stimulation devices with names such as the Beaver Beater, the Fanny Batterer, the Donkey Flogger, Snake Milker, the Lady's Delight, and the French Polisher, all claiming to be able to offer the customer a range of experiences normally only available from specialist establishments. But now we can get them in the privacy of their own homes. Well, so today, in our search for these erotic devices and their intrepid inventors, we're travelling to Surbiton, a leafy suburb of London considered by many to be the epicentre of amateur shagging machine development, in order to meet one of the leading designers of these devices, Mr. Melvin Gink. Now, outwardly, Mr. Gink, a 45-year-old civil servant, appears to be a stereotypical suburban commuter. However, in the garage of his modest 1940 semi-detached house, he's designed and built some of Britain's most sought-after mechanical sex aids. So let's meet Mr. Gink, and perhaps we start by describing some of your devices to us.
Yes, this, the Gorilla Thriller, was my first device.
Yes, it appears to be an electric grill with a huge rubber dildo in place of a bit.
It's very simple but satisfying, and can be used both vaginally and anally. It's a disadvantage is that it needs an operator to hold it and provide with lateral thrust. So solo use really isn't possible.
Most of Mr. Gink's subsequent devices have followed a similar principle to the Driller Thriller. The adaptation of a simple household device, usually a power tool.
Yes, the Pussy Whipper was the next innovation. And it's adapted from electric drill, this time with modified gearings. The speed can be varied. At low speeds, it gives a mild, quite pleasurable slapping. At high speed, it can spank a woman's front bottom red raw in minutes. I mean, when the subject legs are secured in a wider part stance, the Pussy Whipper can be brought in to do its job at low speeds. It can run for 6 hours. 6 hours before overheating.
And for the benefit of listeners, What Melvin is showing us now is basically another drill, but this time with strips of leather attached to its bit and mounted on a steel arm.
Hi, I'm Susie Sleaze with more breaking news. Indiana Jones actor Harrison Ford has been quick to deny reports that he has recently been spotted in a number of sleazy New York strip clubs, ogling the performers and shoving $10 bills down the cracks of their arses. Indeed, according to the 60s Domathing Swinger, the real culprit has been a New Jersey meatpacker named Bob, who bears an uncanny resemblance to Ford. He's like some kind of evil doppelganger, forever undermining my reputation, says Ford, who claims that not only has Bob been impersonating him in strip clubs and brothels all over New York State, but also starred in several unsuccessful movies attributed to Ford, including K-19. Regarding Henry and What Lies Beneath. As if I make crap like that, even I've got standards. He'll be hearing from my lawyers. Ford apparently hopes to obtain a court order forcing Bob to have compulsory plastic surgery. However, Meatpacker Bob Blowstick of Hoboken has launched the counterclaim against Harrison Ford, accusing him of defamation. Thanks to that bastard, my wife is threatening to divorce me after seeing newspaper pictures of someone looking like me hanging out in strip joints, he rages. Who does this guy think he is, stealing my identity so he can visit titty bars with impunity? Witnesses to Ford/Bob's activities remain mystified as to the real identity of the nudie show enthusiast. I don't know if his name was Bob, but he sure as hell could pack meat, observes prostitute Candy Nug, who once thought that she had provided Harrison Ford with personal services, but is now not so certain. What does seem certain is that if Ford's legal action proves successful, the number of other Hollywood stars are likely to follow his example and take action against the evil look-alikes who have been dogging their careers for years. According to industry sources, Val Kilmer is planning to accuse a Wisconsin tire regroover named Nat of having impersonated him in just about every film he has allegedly made since The Doors, as well as a bogus marriage to Joanne Wally Kilmer. Meanwhile, back in the UK, Buckingham Palace has strenuously denied suggestions that Prince William was propositioned by an older gay man last summer during a shooting party on a private estate in Wiltshire, and had to seek police protection when his admirer became enraged by his rejection. A major security alert was allegedly triggered when the prince's sports car was pursued by a Range Rover, reportedly driven by the estate's owner, 78-year-old Lord Trent, brandishing a double-barreled shotgun, in a high-speed chase along the estate's private roads. However, a spokesman for Lord Trent, who was eventually arrested by police, denied any suggestions that the peer had made any improper suggestions to the prince. It was all a huge misunderstanding. His lordship never told the prince that he wanted to take him to a local gay bar, nor did he suggest any improper sexual acts. Having heard that His Highness shared his enthusiasm for modern beat music, he was merely quoting the lyrics to zany American rhythm combo Electric Six's most recent hit, "I'd Like to Take You to the Gay Bar, Gay Bar. I've Got Something to Put in You, at the Gay Bar, Gay Bar." "It is an easy mistake to make," explained Lord Trent's secretary. "His lordship knows the lyrics to all of Electric Six's hits, Gay Bar, Danger, High Voltage and that other one, you know." Whilst the police who originally stopped Lord Trent at first attributed the incident to road rage, believing that Lord Trent had mistakenly thought that Prince William had cut him up and mooned at him whilst pulling away from his own stables, they later accepted his explanation that he had merely been trying to catch up with the prince to return the shotgun that William had inadvertently left behind at the shoot. "I admired the way he handled it, gripping it with both hands and displaying a firm cocking action," he told the officers. "Just like his father, he seems more than capable of handling both barrels at once." That's all for now. More news later.
There must always be a St. Mary's. There must always be a St. Mary.
Yes. St. Mary's was more than a school to her. It was a shrine. And while she'd laugh with me when we differed over little things, she'd fight for the big things to her last breath. The big things. I guess they began with Patsy Gallagher, or should I say with Patsy's mother.
You see, Father, my husband left me a long time ago. 13 years, to be exact, before Patsy was born.
And you've raised her yourself? You've been supporting her all this time?
I suppose you're wondering as to how. So is she. She's getting to be a big girl now, Father.
Well.
But she's beginning to think I'm no good. I want to put her in your care before she finds out she's right.
Well.
Then you'll take her, Father?
I think it can be arranged. And I'll make a deal with you.
Yes? Oh, Father O'Malley.
Oh, now, don't let me slow you up. Don't stop. Tell me. I feel anyone who's as much concerned about her daughter as you are isn't doing too badly. If there was anything really wrong with you, you wouldn't give a darn. You take care of yourself. Sister Benedict, I've been meaning to talk to you.
Yes, Father.
It's about that new girl, Patsy. The one that started a couple weeks ago. How's she doing, sister?
I'm afraid not very well.
No? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Father, when we accepted this child, it was on your recommendation. We know very little about her parents. What kind of home life did she have?
Oh, you know, the usual...
You said you met her mother?
Yes, I met her.
Do you know Mrs. Gallagher well?
Yes, you might say I know her quite well.
Sherlock Holmes and the Whips of Fear by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Episode 2. The story so far, top Victorian sex crime investigators Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson have their breakfast interrupted by the arrival of Inspector Lestrade. The Scotland Yard man brings news of a series of horrific attacks, all perpetrated in houses of ill repute. And astounded Holmes and Watson learn that in each case the genitals were snapped off of a sexually explicit sculpture and smashed to pieces. And now, episode 2.
Good God, that's a sounding, I exclaimed. You are quite right, Lestrade. It could only be the work of a depraved sex maniac, possibly with a severe case of penis envy.
Indeed, Watson... That is one explanation, mused Holmes, sucking on his long-stemmed pipe. But tell me, Lestrade, were all of these sculptures identical, by any chance?
That they were, Mr. Holmes, the Scotland Yard man concurred. They were all plaster casts of an original sculpture.
Holmes leant forward, intently fingering the firm, rounded bowl of his pipe, before asking, "And what exactly did these sculptures represent, Inspector?" Police detective fingered his collar uncomfortably before replying to Holmes's inquiry. They depicted a pair of male youths engaged in certain acts, he stuttered, his face reddening. I've never seen anything like it before, well, except maybe that time in municipal steam baths at Bow. Come to think of it, there was that time in the changing rooms after the Metropolitan Police Royal Navy rugger match. When you say certain acts, Lestrade, I assume you mean that they were going Greek, Holmes' question was met by a blank look from the inspector. Perhaps they were going up the old dirt road, Inspector, building a log cabin, playing Jacksy Jockey? Lestrade's face lit up in understanding at the last phrase. That's precisely it. The shattered penises belong to the one on the receiving end, so to speak. Moreover, both the figures are masked, making identification impossible. Masked, eh? Could it be that the original models are public figures, I pondered, the masks intended to shield them from scandal? I don't know about that, Doctor. They appear to be some type of fuzzy-wuzzy ceremonial masks. For all we know, they could be standard dress code for these sodomites, Lestrade responded. Besides, I couldn't imagine any gentleman participating in such acts. Personally, I think the masks indicate they were filthy foreign pervids. Perhaps, Inspector, I said, but the masks surely preclude the possibility of these being personal attacks directed at the model.
Not entirely, Watson. Perhaps the model can be identified by other means, observed Holmes cryptically.
Also, the fact that the attacks are confined to this particular penis in this particular sculpture would seem to rule out penis envy or any other form of sexual madness. Though, gentlemen, I believe this is the work of a highly intelligent individual with some sort of close connection with his victim.
Could he have contracted a dose of arse clap from the man in the sculpture and is symbolically taking his revenge, I speculated.
That is one possibility, Watson, said Holmes. It seems to me that, as the models in the sculpture cannot be identified, then the next logical step is to locate the sculptor. I don't suppose you have any clues as to his identity, Lestrade.
Unfortunately not, Mr. Holmes, the inspector replied, rising from his seat. Apparently, the sculptures were bought from a third party, some sort of wholesaler that the institutions in question are unwilling to name for fear that it will close them down. I'm afraid we are at a dead end on these terrible attacks. It was too much for me to suppose that you could do any more.
I fear you are correct, Inspector, said Holmes, rising and escorting Lestrade to the door. By the way, out of curiosity,
What were the premises at which these attacks took place?
Madame Whiplash's in Westminster, the House of Rubber on Edgware Road, and the latest was at Mrs. Wackworth's Pleasure Palace in Lambeth, volunteered Lestrade as he left.
Get your hat and coat, Watson. The game's afoot, Holmes exclaimed as soon as the policeman departed.
I thought you told Lestrade there were no leads, I inquired, perplexed by my friend's state of agitation.
Is there some significance in the establishments mentioned?
Indeed, Watson, you recall that last spring we had cause to visit the House of Rubber in connection with the blackmailing of Lord the Ironyard, and ascertained that the strap-on used to fatally sodomise young Jenkins the naval clerk was made of Indian rubber, said Holmes impatiently, adjusting his hat.
Ah, yes, I recall. Lanyard was allergic to India rubber, proving that he could not have worn the murder weapon, and that the photographs were faked.
Exactly, Watson. I also established that such strap-ons were supplied to the House of Rubber by an importer and wholesaler in the East India docks, which also supplied virtually every other establishment in central London, he continued. That, my dear fellow, is where we are headed. Within the hour, we were knocking on the door of a dingy warehouse in Codpiece Street.
Strange that there's no reply. The place is usually a hive of activity this time, mused Holmes, pushing at the door, which appeared to be unlocked. As the door swung open, we were greeted by a horrific sight. A cloaked figure stood over a prone body, with what appeared to be a blood-stained giant penis in one hand.
"Quick, Holmes! We must stop him!" cried Holmes, rushing through the door. As I followed, I felt something brush past my legs, pushing me off balance. Struggling to stay on my feet, I saw the figure swing his priapic club at Holmes, catching him a glancing blow on the shoulder. As Holmes fell, his assailant turned towards me. I saw that his face was covered by some kind of ceremonial African mask. Before I could react, the attacker was upon me, swinging his giant penis toward my head. End of episode 2.
Yes, I mean, and these are some of your other devices, are they? I mean, for instance, here for the listeners, it's what you call the intruder. Is it a heavy-duty penetrating device, which appears to be fashioned from an angle grinder? Is this with a crank replacing the circular blade, which in turn operates a long rod with a huge dildo on the end? What obviously you can't see, listeners, is this whole contraption is mounted on a metal frame, which seems to be... constructed from Meccano?
Yes, the intruder is designed to give a degree of thrust and penetration which no normal man can match. Currently it's geared to give a long, leisurely stimulation. It easily exceeds ordinary male stamina. I mean, I'm hoping to modify it soon to include a vibrating kit.
And this is your latest innovation, I believe, which I believe is still experimental. It's still an experimental stage. It's a suction device, just describe it, it's a suction device called the Jug Milker, which is derived from a powerful cyclone action vacuum cleaner, is that right?
Oh yes indeed, the Jug Milker is very proud of. It's designed to be used on either the breast or vagina. I'm working on a twin nozzle arrangement to allow both breasts to be simultaneously sucked. And the suction action can be pulsed to give maximum stimulation. The carpet shampooing function, which in fact indeed opens up some very exciting possibilities of adapting the spray and pump action sort of a warm, soapy enemas.
But it isn't just these shagging machines which Melvin has been producing. He's also very keen to show us the bondage equipment which he has made himself. Perhaps you could tell us, Melvin, what inspired you to start to... creating this line of equipment.
Yes, you see, most people are put off of bondage because of the perceived costs. They assume they have to buy a lot of expensive specialist gear. In fact, most of what you need can be found in the average home. I mean, for instance, why buy expensive nipple and clitoral clamps when ordinary clothes pegs can do the job just as well?
I thought I'd drop in tonight, Patsy, see how you were doing. How are you doing?
Not too well, Father.
Well, what's the problem?
It's an essay, Father. The five senses.
The five senses. Now, there's an interesting subject. What have you discovered about them?
Nothing. See what I mean?
Oh, here now. What are the five senses, Patsy?
Well, to see, to hear, to taste, to smell, and to feel.
That's right, right. Who's this essay for?
Sister Benedict.
Sister Benedict. Oh, we'll have to take dead aim on this one. See if we can get you an A. Now let's see. Man is endowed with...
Oh, yes, Father.
Well, aren't these hands meant to play it?
Uh-huh.
Then I think I will. Go on and on and on. Every time you're near a rose, aren't you glad you've got a nose? And if the dawn is fresh with dew, aren't you glad you're you? When a meadow lark appears, aren't you glad you've got two ears? And if your heart is singing too, aren't you glad you're you? You can see a summer sky, or touch a friendly hand, or taste an apple pie. Pardon the grammar, but ain't life grand? And when you wake up each morn, aren't you glad that you were born? Think what you've got the whole day through. Aren't you glad you're you? Well, Patsy, I'll leave you with these few little thoughts. What do you make of them? That's good. That's good. Well, I hope you do all right tomorrow.
Thank you, Father. I feel much better.
You know what?
What?
Oh, I haven't had a chance like that in years.
Quiet, children. Everybody quiet now. Class, we are very fortunate in having Father O'Malley with us today. So we'll read some of our compositions aloud. You, Patsy?
The Six Senses.
Well, the subject I gave you was the Five Senses.
Well, I chose for my subject Six Senses.
Well, go on, Patsy, go on.
The Six Senses. To see, to hear, to taste, to smell, to feel. As William Shakespeare said...
Saved by the bell.
All right, children, you may go.
Well, Sister Benedict, I really learned something.
Oh?
There's another sense, you know, Sister.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Don't tell me.
Yes, sense enough to know when to leave. Good afternoon.
I mean, my first bondage device was very simple. I simply had my wife suspended from one of those ceiling-mounted clothes areas in the kitchen. Fortunately, the rope I used wasn't strong enough and she crashed down through the kitchen table. Luckily, it wasn't damaged.
So, I believe that Mrs. Gink has been a willing guinea pig for all of your sex machines.
Oh, yes, I used to strap Mrs. Gink to the kitchen table and give her the full works. But we soon stopped doing that, as it was very unhygienic. I mean, people have to eat off of that table.
And we're very privileged to have Melvin show us a spare bedroom, which he has converted into a fully equipped bondage parlour, where he and his wife now test his devices. As we come in here, I mean, this is ropes and manacles dangling from ceiling beams, whilst an old wooden bed frame is set up with restraints for spread eagle ties, and an old tubular steel hat stand has been converted into a whipping post. Whipping post, rather. Most ingenious. However, dominating the room is his pièce de résistance, a homemade rack. It seems to be, would be correct to say that it's constructed from a telescopic ladder, it seems, laid horizontal and fitted with a manual cranking mechanism? Perhaps you'd elaborate, Melvin.
Yes, the crank came from a car jack. As long as it's kept well greased, it operates perfectly.
And apparently, Melvin, you were telling me earlier that you and your wife find this bondage stroke mechanical stimulation, these sessions, bondage mechanical stimulation sessions, so satisfying that you've not actually engaged in normal penetrative sex since 1991. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, this provides all the stimulation we need. My machines never tire, nor do they suffer from impotence or premature ejaculation. Also, it's so much less messy than the alternative. I mean, my best climaxes have come whilst handling my devices. In fact, my very first erection was at the age of 8 whilst leaning against my mother's washing machine whilst it was on its spin cycle.
You've reached 555-666-666. I'm afraid no one can come to the phone right now. So leave your message after the tone and we'll get right back to you.
Hello. Toby Zitman. It's me, the night caller again. You didn't think just an answer phone would stop me? I got the Polish builder who's been shafting your wife on the line with me now. Would you like to talk to him?